Our Conversation from BAE Systems.
Hello and welcome to Our Conversation, the podcast for BAE Systems colleagues across the world. I'm Tim Smith, and coming up this time, we have a report looking at progress on the technology being developed by reaction engines. We'll also be hearing from the combat vehicles business in the US, and we have a competition where you could win some superb Bose headphones, so listen very carefully to this podcast. As always, I'm joined by Charles Woodburn, Chief Executive of BAE Systems. Charles, hello. Welcome to the programme again. How are you?
Very well, Tim. Good to be here again.
Nice to see you. Now, last time we spoke, you were getting ready for the Chief Executive Business Reviews. How have those discussions been going?
Well, we've completed the business reviews for each sector for the first quarter of the year. As always, they were good conversations. We're having a strong focus, as you'd imagine, on what we're doing to deliver on our commitments. You know, I've said before, the most important thing we can do is to translate our record order book into reliable operational performance for our customers and our shareholders. So that is taking a high degree of focus in the CBR process. We have constructive discussions that people bring forward the kind of issues, the operational issues that they're facing, and make sure that the full support of the organization is brought to bear to tackle some of the challenges and look at those opportunities early. I think it's fair to say we've made good progress in a number of areas, but it's still a difficult year ahead. I mean, in terms of delivery, we've got a lot to do, and translating, you know, this order book into steady growth in both earnings and revenue is the real challenge, and making sure that, you know, we as a team are working together to address those challenges. And it's therefore, you know, coming to the end of Q1 and into Q2 now, that we maintain the focus, keep the dialogue open, and continue to support each other across the business.
Charles, thanks very much for the moment. Coming up next, we're off to the States.
Our Conversation.
Well, I'm very pleased to say that joining us on the line now from York, Pennsylvania in the US is Adam Zarfoss, Vice President and General Manager for Combat Vehicles. Adam, welcome to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much to you as well.
First of all, Adam, give us an overview, if you will, please, of the combat vehicles business.
Certainly. We design, develop, manufacture, and support some of the finest combat vehicles around the world for the U.S. Army, the U.S. Marine Corps, and our allies. Our portfolio includes a mix of long-serving legacy systems that folks have heard of, like the Bradley Fighting Vehicle and the M88 Heavy Recovery System, and some exciting new programs that we're doing for the U.S. Army and U.S. Marine Corps. One of those exciting programs is a platform we're developing for the United States Army that will replace its aging fleet of armored personnel carriers known as the M113s. This program is known as the Armored Multipurpose Vehicle. There are five different variants that we're building for that, with each with its own unique mission role. Everything from command and control to general purpose to two different medical treatment variants that will help safely evacuate soldiers and, if need be, in really critical situation, perform life-saving treatment on the battlefield. For the United States Marine Corps, we have recently awarded a low-rate production contract for a really new, exciting 8x8 wheeled amphibious combat vehicle, which will give the Marines that true amphibious assault capability and allow them to do ship-to-shore operations in a very survivable, highly mobile platform. That vehicle is in production today, and we're looking for that first delivery this summer. And of course, all of this is underpinned by our teams that support our platforms all over the world. We go where our customers go to ensure their missions are successful.
Well, certainly as you've illustrated there, and as we've heard from Charles on this podcast in the past, business is ramping up significantly, isn't it?
It certainly is, and our growth is coming off some really lean years. We had a significant downturn following what was a pretty big surge in the height of the conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan. And to put that into context, we were delivering Bradley's fighting vehicles at a rate of 150 per month. That's almost seven a day. And additionally, we were doing mine-protected vehicles at 10 a day. The downturn that followed was really dramatic. At our lowest point, we were down in less than 10 vehicles a month. We took over 80% of our business base out, and we lost a lot of our teammates and significantly reduced our footprint across the U.S., and that has certainly given us a challenge. The good news is, with some recent program wins and shifting priorities, we're back in a growth trajectory. Some of the new programs we talked about earlier, we're ramping up and getting ready for some pretty exciting times.
How do you prepare, though, Adam, for a jump in demand like the one you've just told us about? Because that is a big change.
Yeah, it certainly is. And the foundation of any good business is all starts with its people. And that's where we started at the front end of this. Making sure we have the right leaders in place is absolutely essential. We've been staffing up across the business from engineering to supply chain to the critical production skills we have around welding and machining and the trades. We've been doing a lot of investment with our local communities to help development talent, whether it's science and engineering or those trades. And that investment's really been paying off as we start to hire up in key sites across the U.S., here in Pennsylvania and the state of South Carolina and Alabama and Oklahoma. And of course, those people need the right tools and equipment. Over about a six-year period, we're putting over $200 million worth of facilities and equipment across the sites. And that's new machining centers in Pennsylvania and South Carolina and new buildings in Oklahoma. And a really big part of this, of course, is our supply base. We need to ensure a steady supply of quality parts to support our assembly lines. That means we have to find the right suppliers and the right teammates that can ramp up at the same rate we are.
So in essence, then, it's a massive team effort. It's people, it's investment, and it's technology as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. We have some exciting new technology that we're applying. And one of the ones we were able to show Charles is the work we're doing around robotic weld technology. We do some of the most complicated and technically challenging welding in the world around thick plate ballistic aluminum, some high hard steel applications, and you know multiple different versions of that. And our engineers and scientists and technicians are really on the front line of applying the new techniques and procedures. The robotic weld cells that we're looking at are really going to help us speed production flow on the longest and deepest welds that'll free up our skilled craftsmen to do the most complicated tasks that need to be done manually. And one of the really nice things is we've involved our tradesmen in the process of automating these processes, and we've gotten some great feedback about how excited they are to be part of the growth for the future.
Sounds like very exciting times. Let me just bring Charles into this discussion, if I may. Charles, you recently visited the combat vehicle site in York, Pennsylvania, to meet employees and see some of the investments. How did that visit go?
Well, yes, Tim and Adam, I enjoyed the visit very much and met some people there, including the Army customer. It's fair to say that I would use the example of using muscles that we haven't used in a long time. As Adam said, this business went through some lean years. They've now won some significant new programs of record, which are now ramping up. And the reward for, winning this work is an awful lot of work now on delivery. And I think what it really brought home to me is, building heavy armor, new chassis at scale is something that as a business that we haven't done in a long time. And that scaling process, especially when it's applied to, in a sense, older designs that were not designed, created with the idea of automated production or automated welding, is a challenge. So the investments are being made. We're seeing the improvements. We're seeing the improvements in quality come through. But this year is really the proof point. And I know Adam and the team are working incredibly hard, incredibly diligently alongside the customer to make sure that we do meet the levels of production that customer demands of us. Would that be fair to characterize that, Adam, as to where we are?
Absolutely. We've got the requisite quality and systems in place, and now it's about predictable performance and flow across the various elements of our enterprise.
And I think one of the things that I was keen to see is recognizing if you haven't done something for 10 years plus, it's almost like starting from scratch. It's not starting from scratch. You've got the systems in place. You've got the sort of memories. You've got people on the shop floor who remember doing some of these things. But getting all of that spooled up, and it is a real challenge for the business. We've been through that in submarines in the UK. We've been through that, and we're working through that with ships up in Glasgow. And I think, one of the things I'm keen to do is make sure that across the business, if there are lessons, skills, things that we've learned in other places that we can bring to bear to make sure that where we have these startup challenges, these ramp up challenges, that we really work as a team to deliver the best outcome.
Okay, Charles, thank you very much. And also Adam, thank you very much. Adam Zarfoss, Vice President and General Manager for Combat Vehicles. Very nice talking to you. Thank you for joining us. Hopefully you'll join us again at some point in the future, and good luck.
Thank you for your time.
Okay. Coming up next, we're heading to the air sector.
Our conversation.
BAE Systems' work with reaction engines on the Sabre air-breathing rocket, which is set to revolutionise air travel, has passed another key milestone. Charles, first of all, tell us a bit about reaction engines.
Well, Tim, it goes back to 2015 from our perspective, when we made a strategic investment of just over £20 million with reaction engines. And then we made a further investment in a second funding round last year. And we formed a working partnership to take forward the development of what is really a revolutionary air-breathing rocket engine. And SABRE, as an acronym, stands for what is really a mouthful in terms of synergetic air-breathing rocket engine. So we say SABRE because it's a lot easier. And it's really exciting technology. It's a new class of engine for propelling high-speed aircraft and spacecraft. So these SABRE engines would be unique in delivering the fuel efficiency of a normal jet engine with the power and high-speed ability of a rocket engine, which is a really difficult challenge to achieve. So unlike jet engines, which are really only capable of powering a vehicle up to about three times the speed of sound, or Mach 3 as we would say, SABRE engines can go all the way up to Mach 5.4, so over five times the speed of sound in air-breathing mode. And then they will switch effectively to a normal rocket mode all the way up to Mach 25. So, you know, it really does have the potential to revolutionize the way we travel and get into orbit and get things into orbit, like satellites, for example. For us, it's not just a financial investment. It's very much a working partnership. You know, we bring our expertise and experience in aerospace technology development, project management, you know, some of those skills to the table. And it also gives the opportunity for some of our employees to be seconded into this, you know, startup technology development environment and work with them to develop this groundbreaking technology, which is a genuinely exciting opportunity.
Well, let's find out more about that now. Colleagues in the air sector have been helping Reaction Engines to develop this groundbreaking technology. And our reporter, Andrew Fletcher, is with them now. Andrew.
Thanks, Tim. Well, I'm with two members of the BAE Systems Air Sector team who've just returned from very successful secondments with Reaction Engines, developing a new class of engine for propelling both high-speed aircraft and spacecraft. Alan Brown, who's head of airframe engineering capability, and Terry Moran, who is a senior quality controller. And Alan, let's start with you. What was your involvement in this very exciting program?
So I was asked to go down to Reaction Engines in Oxfordshire and lead the BAE Systems team. As soon as we were down there, we were able to identify a number of areas that we could add real benefit and value to Reaction Engines, so we brought in people from across different parts of the business.
And Terry, what was your involvement in the project?
So I actually went to South Wales for a number of months to help with a key part of the equipment, the helium circulator. My role then was making sure we had the design changes, we had all the suppliers on board, and effectively we had the kit on the ground to produce and then hand over the circulator to Alan to test, so it was pretty exciting.
And the testing programme has just reached a very significant milestone, hasn't it, Alan?
It has, yes. So the whole programme that we were running down in Oxfordshire was all in the build-up to testing this heat exchanger out in Colorado. So what we've seen in March was them hitting 420 degrees. Gas temperature passed over the heat exchanger and cooling that down to ambient in 1/20th of a second. Mm. So, yeah, hugely impressive.
For you both personally, being involved in a project like this, what has it meant to reach this milestone?
For myself, I was quite proud, obviously. It's the spirit of the people down there, the team, how complicated it was, you know, the project they've got on. And I've never been exposed to that where you're testing stuff and you don't know if it's going to go right or wrong. Personally, it's probably one of the best years I've had in my career.
It was also satisfying from a business point of view as well to see that a huge company like BAE Systems can work with a relatively small company like Reaction Engines, who are around about 150 people. You wouldn't have known, looking at the team that was down there, that there were two separate companies. It was very much one team that was coming together to try and achieve a common goal. So it was, from that point of view, it was very, very satisfying as well.
Well, they have achieved that goal, the pre-cooler heat exchanger successfully achieving all of its objectives in the first phase of high-temperature testing, designed to replicate supersonic flight conditions, and it sounds like more exciting developments to come with future tests planned at even higher temperatures. Alan, Terry, thank you very much indeed. And back now to you in the studio, Tim.
OK, thank you, Andrew. Does sound like a brilliant project. Some very impressive, some fascinating work going on there, Charles. You've been to Reaction Engines, of course. So what were your impressions?
Well, Tim, as you said, it is very exciting. And I personally was very excited by the work that we're doing there. It's a different company. I mean, it's very much a startup mentality, you know, developing this pioneering technology. And, you know, I'd like to think that we can learn a lot from each other, that BAE Systems, the air sector, can learn a lot. And we can also bring our experience and insight of taking technology and integrating them into platforms. So, you know, that can provide some, you know, help and support to the team there. We can learn a lot from their dynamic approach, the fact that, you know, in a small business, people wear multiple hats, they have to solve things very dynamically and quickly. And I think, you know, we can learn from that. They've got a dual track approach that they're focusing on their, you know, long-term goal to get the whole system working, to build a you know, effectively a platform that can go into orbit. And at the same time, understanding customers and markets to spin off some of that technology, because, you know, as is often the case with a startup, you've got this sort of, in a sense, valley of death from a great idea, initial startup funding, but to to take it into a commercial sense. But the technology they've got, which is really absolutely, you know, best in the world heat exchanger, has applications in many other places. There's a range of things they can do, and that will allow them to generate cash that will help to develop, you know, the longer term aim of, you know, building a space platform effectively.
Okay, Charles, thank you. Lots of great work going on there. Very interesting work as well. And I'm sure we'll be hearing more about this in the future and indeed on future editions of the podcast. Coming up next, Charles, don't move. We have a question for you from one of your colleagues. You're listening to Our Conversation with me, Tim Smith. Now, every month we like to put Charles in the hot seat and give you direct access to him. So we have a question for you, Charles. If you're ready, let's hear it.
Hi, Charles. This is Matt Smith from the air sector. As part of the Chairman's Award, we've been celebrating the innovation of a team of engineers who've been doing work in their spare time, in their sheds at home, and basic outside of working hours. How do you think we can facilitate engineers doing that as part of their day job, really encouraging that sort of behaviour, but more at work rather than relying on people doing it at home?
I think it's absolutely fantastic to see this level of commitment from our teams, who clearly love their work. I mean, the fact that they're, in a sense, taking it home. But you are right. And I think, you know, you raised a very good point that we do need to try and build more of that time for innovation and space for it at work. It's a tough challenge. And as I know very well, in businesses and engineering times, it's you know, just finding that time to explore some of these things on the side that often create the really exciting opportunities for us going forward. But there are things you can do. I mean, genuinely, you know, working in engineering environments, making sure that you have prototyping facilities, for example, close to where engineers work so they can try things out and experiment with things, 3D printing. There's a number of things that actually you can do to create that, you know, environment where people can have a great idea and then just go and try it, literally. And then the other thing, of course, is making sure that there is some funding available for that. So within the business, we have things like seed corn funding. But I think, and I've had this conversation with Nigel as CTO, I think there are things that we can do to try and make sure that there is, in a sense, a little more funding available for these innovative ideas. That, you know, if someone comes with a really exciting, it's not just finding the time, it's, you know, maybe working with an internship at a university.
It's helping them.
You know, it's finding a way of facilitating this and making sure that it can happen, because innovation can happen everywhere. People can have these ideas, and then creating an environment where they can come in and put those ideas to good use is something that is very important to me.
Okay, Charles, thank you for that answer. And thank you again to Matt Smith from the air sector for that very interesting question. If you'd like to pose a question to Charles on a future podcast, all you have to do is drop us a line. Send it to ourconversation@baesystems.com. That's ourconversation@baesystems.com. Now, at the start of this podcast, we did promise you a competition, and here it is. We have 5 sets of superb Bose headphones to give away. All you have to do to be in with a chance of being one of 5 winners is answer this question. Now, we've thought very carefully about this question, Charles, and we thought we'd go back to the acronym SABRE. What does SABRE, the acronym SABRE, actually stand for? Send your answers, please, to the usual address, the one I've just given you. It's ourconversation@baesystems.com. That's ourconversation@baesystems.com, and we'll pick the winners at random on the next podcast. Finally, Charles, what's coming up for you then over the next few weeks?
Oh, lots still to come. We have the annual general meeting coming up on the 9th of May. So that's a big event. We have around that the board meeting, trading statement, and then it's back into sort of usual a rhythm of the business.
Okay, and I'm sure we'll hear more about that AGM on our next podcast. Charles, thanks for joining us as always. That's it for this edition of Our Conversation. We return next month with more features and comments from across BAE Systems and, of course, our competition winners. So until then, from me, Tim Smith, and from Charles Woodburn, it's goodbye.
Our Conversation, back next month.